Whitley Strieber, our guest this evening, is the best-selling author of 7 works of nonfiction and over 20 novels. His bestsellers include The Wolfen, War Day, Communion, Transformation, Majestic, The Greys, and many others. His new book is Alien Hunter, Underworld. Alien Hunter Underworld is not a sequel to Alien Hunter. It is a standalone book with some characters, some of the same characters, but it's about an alien presence underground and its possible significance. Although a book of fiction, Whitley Strieber has incorporated a lot of what he believes to be true. Can aliens exist? Do they exist on our planet? First of all, are they coming from other planets, or have they coexisted side by side with us here on this planet all along? Is it too far-fetched to believe that there are hidden alien bases around our planet, in the water and underground? Earlier in June, a very interesting article was released. A team of Harvard scientists believe the remnants of an ancient Earth dating to the time another planet collided with ours to produce the moon may still be lodged deep within the Earth's mantle. So if you thought it was a trip to see Earth from space, just wait until you get a load of this. A team of scientists from Harvard University believe that they have found evidence that an ancient Earth exists inside the Earth. The team believes that a previously unexplained isotopic ratio from deep within the Earth might be a signal from material from before the Earth collided with another planet-sized body, which led to the creation of the moon. This might be an echo of an ancient Earth that existed 4.5 billion years ago, prior to the proposed collision. Do the original Earthlings still exist, and are they in underground bases? When we come back with our guest, Whitley Strieber, we'll examine this concept. We'll find out more about what Whitley knows and what he wants to share with us. Stay tuned. That's coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. For more information on our guest this evening, Whitley Strieber, make sure to visit his website, unknowncountry.com, and for information on his book series, alienhunterbook.com. Whitley Strieber, our guest for the next hour. We'll open up phone lines at the top of next hour if you have questions, stories, things that you'd like to relate back to Whitley. And to me, you can make that time available with us in the next hour. Whitley, what do you believe? I mean, what evidence do you have of there being underground alien bases?
Well, I've done a lot of direct research in this area because it's interested me for so long. And it started with the Dulce papers, back after I was beginning to realize that this world was entirely different from what I had thought before I had my close encounter experience in 85. Beginning to understand that, one of the things I came across was this whole story that started, I guess, with Paul Benowitz about Dulce, New Mexico, and there being this underground base under the Archuleta Mesa there. And so I sent a professional researcher out to do some research on the ground and to take a look and see if what was there was what was being described. And he did not find anything close to the elaborate sort of tunnels and openings and so forth that were being described at that time. It all seemed pretty overblown, but interestingly enough, certain land features turned out to be just exactly what was sort of being spoken of legendarily. But he read the local newspaper of the Jicarilla Apache Reservation and talked to a lot of people in that community. And he discovered that cattle mutilations had been unusually high in that area. I don't know if they still are, but they were back then in the late 80s by this point. And that people saw lights coming out of the mesa fairly frequently. And that the Jicarilla had one of their legends was that the tribe had been created inside the mesa. So you told me, you said earlier, maybe I was an experiment. Maybe we're all an experiment. But in any case, there was enough evidence that he found on the ground doing a total totally conventional research to suggest to me there's probably something going on there. And there's probably things that he didn't get told and things that, because I have learned a lot since then about Native Americans and this experience, and they will scoff at it, most of them, if you ask them. But if you get to know them a little bit, it turns out they have a lot of knowledge of this, of star people and all kinds of different things that fit very well into what those of us who have had these experiences are seeing. So that was where it started. And I extended it beyond that to do research into hidden tunnels under places like Washington, D.C., which has got loads of hidden tunnels, including tunnels that have not been entered, that have been seen on sonar, very old tunnels. No one really knows what their purposes were or are. And I went in a good bit into the business of government tunnels built by governments. And I found out, actually, that the Soviet Union built many more tunnels than we have admitted to building in this country. Although, to look at some of the websites, they're digging them so fast that you make your head spin. I would think that there is a lot going on underground that is conventional in nature, in the sense that it doesn't involve any strange beings or anything like that. But the unconventional stuff is real too. And I have personal experience of this, and I'll tell you what it is. At our cabin in upstate New York, it was on a tailing of iron that was underneath the cabin. That enormous iron tailing went all the way from our cabin up through Rosendale, New York, and into Woodstock. The original Iron Mountain facility is in there. It's called the Iron Mountain area, and those facilities where they store important, precious documents, the secret documents, are drilled into this iron. But not where we lived. There was no drilling nowhere near us. It was miles to the north. However, one time there were weird things happening at the cabin. We saw this child on a bicycle stop in front of the cabin. It's a strange-looking kid wearing a shirt that had knives sticking out of the front of it. It was the creepiest thing I ever saw. I went out and started walking toward him, and he went, got on the bike and rode down into a dead end. It was a T-shaped road, and there was no place to go in that dead end except into the woods. The woods were too thick down there to conveniently take a bicycle. I got down there within seconds of his turning the corner, and he was gone. We all saw him. It was not a personal hallucination. And it was just it was very strange. But then the next day, we were having the road was a co-op road. It was not state-owned. And we were going to do some maintenance on it. So I was talking to some of the other owners along the road. There were six or seven of us. And I had one of them over to the house. We were talking, and Ann and I had been hearing this drilling under the house, this strange drilling, which if you were in the right place and kind of moved your head, it would go up through you, feel like it was going through your feet, and you'd feel it kind of vibrating in your teeth. It was very weird, very weird. And I'm sitting there talking to this gentleman. He's an attorney. He's a very nice guy, and it was a nice group of people in that neighborhood. And we're talking, and the drilling is going on, and he's ignoring it, and I'm ignoring it. All of a sudden, a stream of blood starts shooting out of the center of his forehead into the middle of the living room. And my wife sees this and rushes and grabs Kleenex and starts trying to staunch the bleeding. And he gets up. that's the end of the conversation, obviously. He gets out of there, goes home, and he never came back in that house again. And that sound of drilling continued. And then later we went to another neighbor's house to talk about what was about the road. We had our son with us and another little boy. We walk into the house, and first they found this black dog dead on their porch inexplicably, and their cat has disappeared. So they're in a big tizzy. And we go in, and the little boy, the friend of my son's, is obsessed with butterflies. They have a beautiful window that overlooks a stream, and there's lots of butterflies in there. And so he's standing there looking out the window. You gotta listen to this closely, because it's all this weird synchronicity involved in this. The woman comes into the living room and says, "I found the cat." Whereupon the boy turns around with a jerk. He's wearing a hat, a little baseball cap that says cat on it. And suddenly blood just starts pouring out of both of his nostrils. I mean, like it was a water gun. And we rush to him, and Ann once again finds herself staunching these bleeding. And I said to Ann, "Look, we're going home. This is it. We're done here." We got in the car, and I called the boy's parents before we left. And I said, "This happened." They said, "He's never had a nosebleed before in his life." And so we took him home. We got him out of there. And that was the end of that story. But what am I telling you? I'm telling you that something strange was going on under the ground that was affecting the bodies of people on the surface in weird ways. So do I think there's something going on underground? Of course I do. Of course I do. And when I was working on one of the reasons I'm getting into a little bit about why I'm starting to write fiction about this. I've written a lot of nonfiction about it. It's not all fiction by any means. But I started writing fiction about it some years ago with the book The Grays, which is a novel, a work of fiction. I wrote it about 10 years ago. And I did that because previously I had written a book called Majestic about this subject. It was fiction, but it was based on facts that the former commandant of Wright Pat, General Art Exon, and my uncle, Colonel Edward Streever, had told me about Roswell. But then The Grays was different. I was thinking to myself, are there things I've got trapped up here in my head that I can't get out, that I can't consciously release? And if I write fiction about it, what will happen? And what happened with The Grays was this vivid image of how The Grays are and how they act and how they think and how they work together. It was a wonderful experience to write this thing, because I think I was getting under their skin as I see it and can't articulate it any other way. Now, with Alien Hunter, I did some of this in the first book, and it seemed to work pretty well. There was a real feeling that I was onto something. But with the second book, with Underworld, toward the end of the book, the main character goes into this underground facility, and something happens involving communication with other worlds that is totally unexpected. It's not in any of the literature about underground bases or anything like that. But I have a feeling that I might have happened on something that could be a natural phenomenon or some kind of just extremely exotic technology that can create a situation in which there are two worlds linked together underground. It was an amazing experience to write that. And I have a feeling there's something true in it, something true that I could not express in any other way.
In all of your experiences, and contact. Do you ever feel that you might have been taken underground during those experiences?
You know, that's a good question. I think so much about it, and I seem to know so much about it, and I've done so much research on it, that I wonder if that isn't true. Also, I used to have fantasies as a child of going into these underground spaces that were not scary, but they were not comfortable either. They were kind of very eerie. And so maybe so.
How do you differentiate? I mean, you talked about it in the last hour. You're extremely good at writing. You've got a fantastic imagination and desire to create. How do you differentiate between your having a vividly imaginative experience and something that you believe may have actually happened?
Well, there, mostly, I put this into an area of question, but there remain certain things that aren't in that area, and those are my anchors. The fact that other witnesses at the cabin had experiences, and they weren't just isolated, they were complex experiences involving groups of people having the experience in sequence in different parts of the cabin, etc. In other words, they weren't like group hallucinations or anything like that. They were real on some level. The implant in my ear is real. It is physically real. The implants that Dr. Lear removed, that we had studied at Southwest Research by some great experts, were real. And some of the things that happened scientifically to these things that were inexplicable. I'll give you an example. One of them had been emitting an FM signal in the neck of the guy that had it in his body until it was removed. We took it to Southwest and had it examined. We were thinking that Dr. William Mallow at Southwest was hopeful that we'd see some kind of crystalline structure in it that would explain how it could emit an FM signal. It was crystal. It had to be a crystal of some kind, right? So a very high-frequency FM signal. So we looked at it in a scanning electron microscope, didn't see anything on the surface. It was pretty much like all the other of these implants, mostly iron, nickel iron. So we decided take it and put it in an X-ray diffraction machine, which might show some subsurface structures, some structures that would be otherwise invisible to the SEM. Take it over to University of Texas, the San Antonio Geology Department. There's a big X-ray diffraction machine there, and the guy running it and Bill have been friends for years. So we put it in there. It makes a pass, and you can hear the return. It makes a return on the thing. Makes another pass, no return. Another pass, no return. How can this be? It's made of iron. Iron reflects X-rays, so what's happened here? Machine must be broken. Machine checks out. He does a test run with known materials. It's perfect. We take the little implant back to Southwest, and we rescan it on the SEM. It's still nickel iron. Nothing's changed. Take it back to the X-ray diffraction machine. It was nickel iron that had become X-ray invisible as soon as it was touched by X-rays. We were looking at a piece of technology so far in advance of ours that we can't even begin to conceive how it worked. That was real, physically real. And not only that, it's all documented on a NBC documentary I did years ago called Confirmation. It's all in the show.
Whitley Strieber is our guest this evening. We'll open up phone lines at the top of next hour. If you have questions or stories that you'd like to relate with our guest, Whitley Strieber, you can check out more information about him at his website, unknowncountry.com. Also check out alienhunterbook.com for his new release. We've got so much more to cover. You're listening to the best in overnight talk radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Fascinating show tonight. Whitley Strieber, our guest. His new book, Alien Hunter Underworld, available. You can find information at alienhunterbook.com. If you've missed any part of tonight's show, shame on you. But We've got you covered. You can become a Coast Insider for less than 15 cents a day. You can get access to 5 years worth of archives. You can get access to direct communication and live chats with George Norrie and the other hosts of Coast to Coast. And you'll also get a chance to talk with a lot of the different guests that you hear right here on this show. How do you do it? It's real simple. Very easy. Just go to coasttocoastam.com. Again, that's coasttocoastam.com. You'll find information on all of the shows coming up, all of our past shows, what's in the news, what's trending. It's all there, and you can become an insider. Again, you can't beat it. For less than 15 cents a day, you get the best in overnight talk radio, and you'll never miss another minute of the show. We've got a lot more to cover with our guest Whitley Strieber this evening. Phone lines will open up at the top of the hour. Stick with us. So much more to cover right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. Sitting in for George Norrie, I'm Dave Schrader, and our guest this evening, Whitley Strieber. His new book, Alien Hunter Underworld, examines the ideas of alien underground bases, underwater bases, and all of the experiences you've had. Personally, Whitley, do you believe that any of them, is there evidence that these creatures that you encountered were coming up from below?
Well, yeah, as I said earlier in the show, there was significant evidence of that. The way some of them smelled and the references that it seemed to be more of an experience involving things coming up from below at my cabin than from down from above. There was the first night of the experience, I definitely went up into a thing, and it was later seen that same night by a friend of mine who didn't know exactly what he was looking at. He was a state policeman coming home from a Christmas party, and he saw this thing, which he took to be a Goodyear blimp in a field near our houses, and he thought, well, you know, I better stop and take a look, because this thing could be if it's a blimp, it's certainly in distress. It was 3 o'clock in the morning. He got out of his car, his wife was with him, and started moving toward it, walking toward it, and he could hear someone in it screaming. He began to run toward it, whereupon lights came on all over it and began to make a growling noise and to move across the field toward him, whereupon his wife panicked in the car, understandably. And he figured, well, it seems to be under power, and whatever's happening in there, I'm not going to be able to do anything about it. So he got back in his car and drove home. My book, I didn't know anything about this. My book came out. And about a year after my book came out, now 2 years after the incident, he came over one day and he said, you know, I have something to tell you I'm very ashamed about, because I should have tried to help you, but I was actually there that night. So that was one from above, but a lot of it came from below. But there's a lot of stuff, even beyond my personal experiences, like where I live right now. I'm a few miles from Point Doom in Malibu, and off the coast of Point Doom at a depth of about 2,000 feet, there is a very weird geological formation that can be seen on Google Earth. And a friend of mine, Lee Spiegel, who does the sort of weird news section of the Huffington Post, has written about it. There's the Jimmy Church of the Fade to Black radio show has been saying he thinks it is an underground base, and underwater base. And if you look at it, it is really pretty strange looking, but Lee asked some geologists about it, and the geologists are all saying, oh, it's a natural feature. It really does not look very natural to me. I will say that, but I'm not a geologist. I don't know. However, I do know a good bit about the UFO phenomenon in this immediate area, and I'll tell you a little bit about it. First of all, this is a very active area. But back in the 90s, starting in 1992, one of the most incredible UFO flaps ever took place just a couple miles down the road from Point Doom in Topanga Canyon. What happened was, on that night, 17 different witnesses, documented witnesses, observed strange craft flying through the canyon, going down the canyon, and seeming to go down into the water, into the Pacific. It continued for hours. And then it went on. This went on for years in the Topanga area. There were sightings, landings. Cars would be chased in the canyon by UFOs. That must have been exciting. There were face-to-face encounters. There was people had missing time. There were abductions. There was just all kinds of stuff going on down in there for years, for 2 or 3 years at least. Now, just recently, there was also one of the great USO sightings, undersea craft sightings, right out off Santa Monica. And last November, some friends of mine saw orange orbs coming up out of Santa Monica Bay. And people see this stuff all the time around here. I have friends who live up in the hills and above Malibu, and they have these experiences. People have even seen these orbs in their homes. And so, even though the geologists are saying this thing that's this strange, huge structure underwater, 2,000 feet underwater, is a natural formation, you have to wonder what might be going on under there. Certainly, one thing is true. There's something unusual happening underwater out here, or these things wouldn't be going into the water, would they, or coming out of it? They're real. They're there. It's not a bunch of people blowing grass or anything. They're really seeing this.
Is this geological formation, as they're referring to it, is it anything like the one in the Baltic Sea? Are you familiar with that story?
Yeah, no, it's much bigger, first of all, and it's much more structured in a way. It's a sort of oval surface with these gigantic, what appear to be columns, coming down from its edge. It's huge. That's a good question, because it looks sort of like the thing in the Baltic Sea from above. Actually, it does. Sort of similar. But it's bigger. It's much, much bigger.
Much more detailed. When you're getting, you mentioned earlier that you were getting millions of letters, and with the advent of email, you get even more in contact constantly, and you're hearing from readers and experiencers. Do you get many reports of people seeing or being taken to underground facilities?
Well, I have some extraordinary reports of this. Probably the most extraordinary is in the book my wife created, The Communion Letters. You know, Anne is brilliant. She read every one of these letters over the years. She read, and her secretary, they transcribed thousands of them. And here's one. This is from a gentleman who describes a thing that he did when he was a child, that involves an underground base. He and three of his friends took their BB guns and went into an area which was fenced off, a top secret area. And here's what he says. In a small gully, we encountered a shimmering mirage effect that reflected the sides of the gully as mirrors reflect the sides of a magician's box. Now, that's not exactly the kind of thing I referred to earlier when I saw that sort of black hole in my woods, but it was similarly disorienting, let's put it that way. I guess like an animal who doesn't really understand something might see some kind of a machine that it's incapable of understanding. Anyway, Going through the mirage, we found a large tunnel that led deep into the hill. Thus, we entered the base undetected. There was no road to the tunnel, only a well-traveled path that connected it to a gray-green, ratty old house set back among the trees. This house also served as another entrance into the base. Anyway, they find benches in there. Then, entering the base proper, we were fully functional and free to go where we wanted under no restrictions. A groove ran down the middle of the tunnel floor. This divided into four other grooves, which led to what seemed to be a landing bay. And it goes on, and he goes into, they really had, if this is a true story and it's so detailed, it's hard to think it wouldn't be. In bay three, they saw three or four bays. There was a UFO that they saw. There were occupants in it. And eventually, they got into trouble with the creatures inside this tunnel and ended up being forced to leave. It's quite an extraordinary story. It goes on at great length about all of this details. And he says this base is 2.5 miles by 0.5 mile wide on two different levels. And it's enormous, in other words. And it was he ends it this way. Speaking of these orbs I just talked about earlier, let me describe a light I saw in the living quarters. It was a glass globe, 3 feet in diameter, hanging down from a foot-long, six-inch thick glass column. In it was a whirling mass of silver sparks like fireworks, constantly moving and changing shape. It was fantastically beautiful to see, not so different from these orbs that people are describing seeing floating in the air. And this letter was sent to us long before anyone was talking about seeing orbs like that. So it's just fascinating stuff. That's an example. In answer to your question.
Do you believe or have any of the experiencers shared in their letters when they are taken to these underground facilities, are the aliens the only ones there, or are they working hand-in-hand with our people?
I don't have any specific information about that. There are a lot of stories, of course, but I don't have any personal information. I have witnessed people, as I said earlier, who put something into my body, into my ear, that was obviously a technology that is far beyond anything that's publicly available or known. So it's conceivable that's where they got this technology from whoever it is, aliens or not, who has it, who possesses it, and controls it. Or maybe, once again, it's us. On some level, we don't even know what we are. We have no idea. Mankind's been like this, in this state, with this brain, for barely a couple of hundred thousand years. The universe is 17 billion years old, at least. And you can be sure quite a few things have happened between the beginning, its beginning, and the last tenth of a second that we've existed. Who knows?
Well, when you were writing the book Alien Hunter, with the press release information that I'd received from you, you said as you reached the end of the book, you had an incredible vision of an underground facility that you incorporated into the book. What is being done? What are these facilities being used for? Or at least, what was the vision that you were given about this?
Well, mostly, if you look at the Dulce material in this strange video, which is available, it's up on Unknown Country right now for the duration of the show, this weird video that purports to be taken inside the Dulce Basin, could have been, for all I know. I mean, it's so strange, you have to wonder what it may really be. In any case, there's a lot of ideas that that these are places where there are hybrids and things being bred and things like that going on. But that wasn't what I saw at all. In the vision that I reproduced in my book, it was about a kind of wormhole, a point of contact with another world that is hidden inside the earth. Not that the world, other world is hidden inside the earth, but that the point of contact is there. So that you, at one point in this place, you can literally walk from one planet to another. Now, could that be true? Interesting, because we used to think that wormholes could never, I mean, there was so much energy necessary to create a wormhole that it was absolutely out of the question. Now we know that wormholes between different parts of this universe can exist briefly, I mean by briefly in the millionths of a second or less, without the expenditure of so much energy. But here's the fascinating thing. Wormholes between our universe and a parallel universe would be more sustainable and more stable and not require as much energy. In other words, somebody could open the door. And maybe that's what this underground stuff is really all about. The open door is beneath our feet.
It's interesting you bring up that theory and idea. When we talk about things like Bigfoot and cryptid creatures like that, that have been witnessed and seen and in pictograms or pictographs and around forever, and they just seem to vanish. Are they the aliens? Are they part of that? There, a lot of them are witnessed in locations where there is heavy concentrations of UFO sightings as well. Could they be using some type of wormhole teleportation or so to just vanish? How do they just go from being there to not being there? Do you lend any credibility or credence to the idea that maybe that is what's going on even with the cryptid creatures?
Well, yeah, I've seen things vanish many times with my own eyes, so I know it can be done. Here's a fascinating story. It's told by Colm Kelleher, and I think George Knapp together wrote a book called Hunt for the Skinwalker. Incredibly cool book.
We've got about 2 minutes, Whitley, just okay. To let you know. Okay.
All right, about the Skinwalker Ranch in Utah that Bob Bigelow bought and sent a bunch of scientists to. A huge wolf came out of a marsh and attacked a goat or calf. It was shot at by the ranchers, and it eventually ran back into the marsh. The scientists arrived a short time later and discovered that from its footprints, it weighed 300 pounds. I know what it was. I knew it when, as soon as Colm described it to me. It was a dire wolf from the Pleistocene. So you talk about wormholes to other worlds. What if they could also go between the present and the past? Fascinating to me.
It is. And there's so many possibilities with what is going on, what is being experienced, what people believe that they're seeing. We mentioned in the first hour these strange vortexes that have appeared in Mexico and Denmark and around the world, these spiraling, almost optical illusion doorways that appear. Could those be the wormholes? Could that be the way they're coming into our universe or traversing to theirs? We've got more to discuss. Phone lines are opening. We've got Whitley Strieber for another hour right here on Coast to Coast AM.